Good morning. We're starting the sugya of Schiras Payalim. Now, a few months ago, we went through the halachas of Baal Talin, and we saw the tremendous chomer and the tremendous severity of the halachas of paying a worker on time. We went through, there are five or six isurim, if a baal habayis, if an employer does not pay his employee every penny that he deserves. Today we're going to discuss the opposite side of the equation. What are a worker's responsibilities to his employer? The Rambam, interestingly enough, compares it to the end of Hilchos Schiras. He writes, "Kederech shemuser baal habayis le'yigzol schar ani v'le'yakvenu." The same way the Torah has a tremendous kveda that an employer has to pay every penny that he owes his workers, and he has to pay it on time. Kach ani muzer shlo yigzo meleches baal habayis v'yivatol ma'at mikan u'moitzi kol hayom b'ma'ara. So too, a worker is muzer, is warned that it's also for him to go ahead and waste a few minutes here, a few minutes there, and before he knows it, he's going to be wasting an entire day. While when an employer steals, it's more dramatic. If he doesn't pay his workers, it's the avla and the injustice is very clear and very blatant. If a worker goes ahead and chaps the shmooze here and chaps the shmooze there, it may not be as noticeable, but the end result over time is that he's stealing a tremendous amount from his baal habayis. And the Rambam continues that we learn from Yaakov Avinu, Shere Yaakov Atzadik Oymer Ki Bechol Koichi Avati Es Avichen. Yaakov was able to be made after 20 years, Bechol Koichi, with every ounce of my strength, I served your father. Ulfikach Notos Char Zois Apo Oilam Hazesh Nema V'yifroi Tzvayish Ma'oyin Ma'oyin. The Rambam ends that Yaakov was zeicha to the tremendous wealth that he earned because of this mitzvah, because he was a faithful worker. People are always looking for skulas, how to get rich quick. What the Rambam says, the skula is, to be honest, it may not be a get rich quick skula, but at least over time, long term success, being erlich, making sure you fulfill your responsibilities to your employer, is what to do. Now, interestingly, the source of these halachos comes from the relationship between Yaakov and Lavan. Now, I think it's no coincidence. Many people who know that they, you know, don't work quite as hard as they should, they might reheter, because what? From my boss? I know what goes on in the office, I know how much he takes advantage and cheats everybody else, and therefore I don't have to work so hard for him. Who did Yaakov work for? Lavan. Lavan, the Torah's maid, was history's greatest swindler. And how he tried again and again between Rachel and Leah and switching the sheep and the payment, he could not find the bigger ganav. And still Yaakov was made after 20 years of Tracy Vlahivesi Lelacha and Anichech Atenum Yavi Tzivakshenu, how he was medakti Kuchun HaSaira. Not only was Lavan a ganav, we say in the Haggadah, Rami Ovid Ovi, he was the biggest anti-Semite. He was ready to destroy the entire Klal Yisrael. And still, even though you're dealing with such a Rasha, still we see how Yaakov didn't lower his standards. And certainly it's a kolshkein, a kolshkein, and a kal v'chomer to ourselves, however much we don't like our bosses, but Lavan, probably not as bad as Lavan. So let's begin. I think everyone understands that when you accept a job, you have to put in an honest day's work. Where it gets tricky is, how do you define what is an honest day's work? So, if you open up the Gemara that we learned this morning, Daf Pei Gimel, Reish Lakish says that if you hire someone for a day, he has to work from sunrise until sunset. That's what working for a day means. Now, if they make a tnai, if they say very specifically it's only 9 to 5, a davar shebemamon, whatever you make up will be binding. But if you don't make up anything, you just hire someone, come work for me for the day, he has to work from sunrise to sunset. Erev Shabbos, we're a little bit more lenient. And Erev Shabbos, we let him leave work with enough time to get home, to cook a fish, to fill up a barrel of water, and to light Neir Shabbos. which means if you're going to try to convince your boss you need 4 hours to get to the country or to get to the mountains on Friday, la halacha, it's not going to cut it. You get, you know, a couple extra minutes, and that's about it. Now there's another halacha, this is actually brought down in Shin Lamed Zayin. There's a Yerushalmi that Rabbi Yochanan once came to a cheder. He went to watch a melamed teach the students. He noticed that the melamed looked very weak and didn't look that healthy. So he asked him, "Is everything okay? You're right. Are you feeling okay?" So the melamed proudly told him that I'm fasting. He was apparently a big kaddish. He was a parush, and he yoshev b'tanya, a very very heiliger person. Rabbi Yochanan's reaction was, "You're a ganav. You were hired to teach Talmidim. If you don't eat, you may have all sorts of wonderful cheshvoinus, you're doing tshuva, whatever it is, but the bottom line is, you're not able to work the way you're supposed to. You don't have the energy, you don't have the strength." And therefore he says, plain and simple, what you're doing is ganeva. And this halacha is brought down in Shin Lamed Zayin, and there it adds a little bit of a chiddush based on a tesefta. And that is, not only is there an isser to fast if you're working for someone, there's also an isser to just to go on a diet. If you're coming to work and you don't eat that much, if you don't eat as much as you need, then, again, I don't know about you, but I think most people when they're on diets, they're cranky and they're hungry, they're in lousy moods, and they just, you know, they don't get as much done. So it's a mefurish halacha in Shulchan Aruch that it is usser for a worker to go on a diet. Now it's almost Hanukkah. If you have an office party and you notice someone, you pass around the latkes and the donuts, and he passes and you see him reaching for the veggie sticks, you fire him on the spot. So first, Allah and Shulchan Aruch. Now, the same halach, same mechaber continues. It's also for a worker to stay up late at night. The next morning you're tired. You won't be able to work and put in all of your kaychas. Now what's very clear from these halachas is that when you hire a worker, and you hire him for the day, his responsibilities don't end when he leaves the office. He has a responsibility throughout the day to make sure to take care of himself, and to make sure that when he comes in to work the next day, he's fresh and able to put in all of his kaychas. Now I'm getting some very strange looks from the audience. Not many people here work from sunrise to sunset. Most people also, on occasion, whether it's after Pesach or Sukkot, and they need to come there, they ate a little bit more than they should have, try to lose a few pounds. How does that stem with this halacha? So the answer is, and it's the Mishnah that we learned this morning, is that when you're dealing with all dinei mamonis, but specifically by Sturis Poyolim, the halacha is hakol lefi minhag hamedina. If there is a minhag, if there is a norm, if there is a local, if there is a standard, whenever you hire someone, if you just hire him sam, you don't speak out otherwise, we assume that the deal is going to be defined by the minhag, by the local norms. And therefore, although in halacha, if you hire someone for a day, it means sunrise to sunset, today if the minhag, if the norm is a day is 9 to 5, if you hire someone, that is going to be the default. It's true for hours, it's probably true for dieting. If people today, most middle-aged people at some point during the year, have to lose a few pounds, then it's understood. You hire someone, he's going to do this, and unless you specify otherwise, you would have the right to do it. It's within the norm, and api halacha, you cannot stop a person from doing the norm. This halacha applies also to vacation or to severance pay. If you hire someone, you don't speak out whether he will or will not get vacation days. If there is a minhag, if there is a certain minimal amount that every employer gives his employees, although it wasn't discussed, they didn't mention anything about it, hakol lefi minhag hamedina, and you're going to have to give whatever that norm is. If you want to override it, you could. If you want to sign a contract, you want to tell them no vacation, you have to work from sunrise to sunset, no dieting, you can do whatever you want. But it has to be agreed. If you don't speak it out, then the default is to follow the norm. Now the Yerushalmi adds that this concept of minhag is extremely powerful. Although normally the rule is, whenever there's a fight between two parties, so what's the halacha if neither party can prove their case? Hamoitz mechaveo avaraya. the muhzik, the person who's holding on to the money, is going to win. The Yushalmi says that a minhag will override hamotzi mechivah overaya. And if an employer and employee are fighting, the worker says that I'm supposed to work 9 to 5. And the boss says, no, we made up, you're coming 7 o'clock in the morning. And therefore, since you didn't show up, I'm paying you less. Although the employer is the muhzik, the halacha is we're going to force him to pay. Since the minhag is 9 to 5, unless he can bring proof that they changed the minhag, we're going to assume that 9 to 5 was the deal, and we can force the employer to pay. So we're going to be moitzi mamon based on the minhag. The shach paskens even more, even if the employer has a migu, whatever the migu is, still, if there's a minhag, we're going to follow the minhag unless you bring absolute proof against it. Now the Gemara adds another chiddush. What happens if you hire a worker? And normally the worker gets paid $200 a day. The hours are 9 to 5. You pay the worker $250 a day. And then you tell him, by the way, once he starts the job, he tells you, by the way, I pay more and I expect more. And I want you to be in the office every day at 8 o'clock. Or I want you to stay late, whatever it is. So here the Gemara says very clearly, even though you're paying more than the norm, still, you can't force him to do more than the minhag. And even though he's getting paid well, he only has to show up 9 to 5, he has to do whatever the standard minhag is going to be. Now there was a story recently, there was a person had a basement that he wanted to rent out. He tried renting it out as a normal apartment, he wasn't able to find a tenant. So he decided, this isn't Lakewood, he had some old furniture, he put it in the basement, and he rented it out as a furnished apartment. People come in, they rent for on a temporary basis a furnished apartment until they can find a place to settle. And that's what he did. He rented it out, everything was wonderful. 30 days later, there's a knock on the landlord's door. Tenant said, I've been there for 30 days, and the halacha is, a seicher after 30 days has to put up mezuzahs. Please give me 12 mezuzahs to put up. The landlord said, what are you talking about? Mezuzahs? I have to provide you with an apartment, it's furnished, but I don't have to give you mezuzahs. Tenant said, you certainly do. Every furnished apartment that comes fully furnished with mezuzahs. And therefore, I want the mezuzahs also. So the landlord wasn't interested. And he said, by the way, you've been here for a month already, and I'm very happy you've paid your rent on time, but I never charged you for utilities. And typically, there's a separate fee for utilities. It's, you know, you're paying $1,000 rent. There's usually about a $150 fee for utilities. And I want you to pay for the utilities. So now the tenant said, what are you talking about? Everyone else pays $850 for this apartment. I'm paying $1,000 for this apartment. So I'm paying more, and you didn't ask for utilities back then. So I assumed I don't have to pay for utilities. The landlord says, what are you talking about? The minhag is you pay this rent and this utility. It's two separate cheshbonos. I want to get paid. So who's right? So let's deal with this story. Let's one case, one part at a time. As far as the mezuzahs are concerned. So here, the halacha is, if I rent a furnished apartment, hakol lefi haminhag, we have to look what is the minhag. And since the minhag is when you rent a furnished apartment that comes with mezuzahs, the tenant is right. And the tenant has every right to tell the landlord that you have a chiyuv to go ahead and give him mezuzahs to put up, because when we rented a furnished apartment, you have to give me whatever the normal definition is. So even though the landlord may plan on selling the house in a month, and even though he claims he didn't know about this minhag, although again, we'll discuss not knowing a little bit later, but still the pashas would be, if there's a minhag, he's bound to it, and he's going to have to provide mezuzahs for the tenant. Now the second part of the story is a little bit more complicated. The second part of the story, what happened? The landlord told the tenant that, listen, we made up a rent, but the minhag is to pay for utilities separately, and therefore I want another $150. The tenant said, that what do you mean? You're right, there is such a minhag, but the normal price is $850. I paid more, and therefore my understanding, my understanding was, or should have been, that I'm not paying anything else. So over here, the Trumas Hadeshen in Siman Shin Chaf Gimel has an almost identical case. And here he says, the concept of Damim Moedim. If I buy something, and it's not clear what I include, I bought a wagon, and it's not sure, I'm not clear whether it included the donkey or not. So over here, the halacha is normally Hamoitzim Mechidei Ovaraya. Normally, if I want to prove, if I want to claim, it includes the minimal amount. There's a halacha of Damim Moedim, that we can look at the price. If the price that I paid was enough for both, that indicates that I bought both. I didn't just buy one. I should think if I just paid the amount that should just cover the wagon, shouldn't cover the horse. The Damim will tell us what was intended in the sale. Now, that's a whole machlokes when we do say Damim Moedim, when we don't say Damim Moedim. But Zakei Trumas Hadeshen, when you have Damim Moedim, when the price that you paid proves that the sale was broader, included something else, and you're the muchzik, you're going to win even though it's against the minhag. And therefore the Trumas Hadeshen says, since the minhag is... Even though the minhag is that you pay for it separately, since over here you paid a higher rent, and in the Trumas Hadeshen's case at least, you were a muchzik, so those two together will override the minhag. And even though the minhag is to pay separately, since here you paid a higher rent and you're a muchzik, we can force you to pay the utilities for the past month. And that's the Trumas Hadeshen's psak. Ktzaitz comes along and says, this is Kenegan Mufurisha Gemara that we just learned. What did we just learn in the Gemara? That if a worker normally gets paid $200, and he works 9 to 5, and you pay him $250, and then you tell him, I want you to show up early, what's the halacha? Can you do that? No. I don't my diem. You're paying more and you're a muchzik. It's true, can't be right. You see clearly that even though there's Damim Moedim, even though you're paying the person more, still you have to follow the minhag unless they specifically negotiated otherwise. Comes along the Ktzais and says, it's not a kasha. The Gemara's case is, you have a worker that usually gets paid $200. You went ahead and paid him $250. Even though you paid him more, the halacha is, you can't demand that he work harder, because minhag defines the job. And even though you're paying more, don medim, even though you're muzik, you can't override a minhag. In the case of our lease, if you think about it, there are really two different minhagim. You're right, there's a minhag that you pay for utilities separately. There's also a minhag that when you rent the apartment, you discuss the rent, you also discuss the utilities. And you negotiate two separate fees, one for rent, one for utilities. In this case, Even though there is a minhag to pay for utilities separately, and that backs up the landlord, but according to the landlord's story also, you have not complied with the minhag. Because the same minhag that says to pay for it separately says, negotiate it separately also. Since you didn't discuss it at all, that means regardless, you're not consistent with the minhag. The minhag is to talk about it and to have a separate fee. Since you didn't talk about it, you can't now say, we didn't listen to this minhag, we listened to, but the other minhag is true. And in such a case, where even according to the landlord, the minhag was not followed, there we will say, Damim Moedim. And going back to the case, so therefore, since they didn't discuss the utilities, and the minhag is to discuss it beforehand, so in such a case, the tenant will win, since the Damim Moedim, since he's paying a higher price, he will be able to say, the higher price is to include the utilities, and he will not have to pay.
Isn't it talking the same that the minhag of a regular apartment is not just buying the minhag of a furnished apartment?
Correct. Both for mezuzahs and for this utilities, the minhagim are separate. We're dealing specifically with furnished apartment. For a minhag, you have to be very specific. So again, basically what it comes out is, if you pay a person more, you still are bound to the minhag. It's only in these specific cases where either way the minhag wasn't followed, then we can look at the price to figure out what was really intended with the deal. Now at this point, I'd like to take a little bit of a detour. I'd like to start going through some of the halachos of minhag. Basically, every time we learn a new inyan, every time there's a shiur on really any topic in Chayshim Mishpat, the first question that people have is, there's a certain local, there's a certain norm. People do business in a certain way. I mean, for example, we spent a number of weeks learning Hilchos Ayna. Did anybody here ever have a situation where they sold something, and the next day they get a phone call from a customer and said, "You ripped me off, it's Ayna, I want a refund." Did that ever happen? No. So do we have a minhug now that there's no Hilchos Ayna? For that matter, what about Batalin? In many industries, the norm is you don't pay on time. 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, depending on the industry. Do we now have a minhug that Batalin doesn't apply? So when do we apply minhug and when don't we? And again, for that matter, we have other cases where there's a minhug we mentioned a few times in certain inner cities that when you park your car, the hubcaps disappear. Is that a minhug? Where do we draw the line? What do you need to create a minhug, and what are the limitations of the power of a minhug? So let's go through. There are a number of different klalim. There's a lot of confusion about the topic. I'll try to at least be misadrid a little bit. The first point is, for a minhug to have any meaning in halacha, it has to be a very clear minhug. It has to be something that Rambam says that happens constantly, and therefore everyone has to know about it. And the explanation of this is very simple. Minhag is not a new gzeres hakasav. What's the point of a minhag? The point of a minhag is that if you and I agree to something, I'm going to hire you for a day. If we don't specify the terms, when I say I'm going to hire you for a day, I mean whatever people consider a day's work. So if there's a clear consensus what that means, that's the minhag, that's the definition. If it's something which is an unusual situation, doesn't happen that often, there can't be a minhag, because people don't know what happens, and therefore you can't say it was implicitly part of the bargain. Very often in Dinei Torah, people will come in, and they will say, "I'm right because the minhag is like me." The other person will say, "No, you know, the halacha, first of all, the halacha is not like that, and second of all, the minhag is the other way." The moment you have to start figuring out, is there a minhag or isn't there a minhag, the halacha is, there's no minhag. Now, obviously, because one person claims to tell the bezin that minhag does or doesn't exist, that's not enough. But if you make a few phone calls, and no one can tell you clearly, it's not obvious to everyone, what should happen in this case, the halacha is that minhag is absolutely no tekif in halacha. It has to be very clear, very widespread, and that's why, so much so, that it became implicitly part of the agreement, that whenever we said it, this is what the intent was. I recently actually had a dentaya recently. It was two brokers, and what happened is one broker had put together a certain deal. That deal went through. He got his commission, and then the parties went ahead and did a second deal. Now, al pi halacha, if a broker puts together one deal and then the parties afterwards he gets his commission, he doesn't own the people. He doesn't own his clients, and if they go ahead and do business in the future, he's not entitled to any commission. Now, in this particular industry, or in this particular company, there was a pretty clear minhag that if one person puts them together, he gets a commission loyal and void. It's his clients, he gets something, maybe not the full amount, but he gets something. But the story involved, there were exceptions to this rule. They had all sorts of rules in the company. And the story involved something which was a little bit questionable. One broker said it was, you know, it is included in the minhag. The other one said it isn't. So the halacha is, since it was a real suffix, at best it was a suffix whether it was or wasn't included in the minhag, there is no minhag. Minhag is only when it's completely clear. And the moment there are sveikas, some people think yes and some people think no, we will go back to the ikar hadin. And therefore the Rashbam says, whenever you have a question about minhag, first you have to figure out what the halacha would be without the minhag. And then, to whatever extent there's a clear minhag, you can override it. Anything which there's any level of suffix, you're going to have to default back to the Ikar Hadin. Now the Ramah, or actually it's Kivega, really makes a point about minhagim. And he says that this halacha that has to be widespread is only a regular minhag. A regular minhag. However, if the minhag is a minhag vasikin, if the people got together and they made a new rule, from now on, this is the way we're going to do business, that minhag is binding even though it only happened once or twice. It doesn't have to be widespread. Now, what Rav Kiviger is really pointing out, and this is important when you go through the Maram Kaimis about Minog, is that when we use the word Minog, there are two completely separate concepts that really have no shaykhus in halacha, but we use the same word for it. One type of Minog is the Minog of just how people do business. There's no real halacha to that, except if I hire someone or make a deal and we don't specify the terms, the assumption is we mean the default, whatever is, that's the norm in the industry. That's the first type of minog. There's another kind of minog, which is basically a takana. People in the city, just like a bezin has the right to make a takanos, people in the city have the right to get together and say we're going to make a takana. From now on, these are the rules how we're going to do business. When they make a takana, it's binding, not because everyone who does a deal accepted it. It's binding because of the koyach of a tzibur, the koyach of a government, of a hefker, bezin, hefker. A tzibur has the right to make rules, takanas. There are procedures how to make a takana. But as long as the procedures are followed, if there's a rule that's made, it's the takana, it's going to be binding. So when we see the word minog in halacha, sometimes we mean a minog just that it evolved. And that's something that you need for it to be very widespread and very well known. Sometimes it means a takana. Takana doesn't have to be well known. It doesn't have to be something which is common. As long as they made a takana, they follow the rules, then the takana will be binding. Now, the next important halacha about minog is the first mission of Bava Basra discusses the concept of hezekriya. When two people own a courtyard and the halacha is, it says hezekriya, they can force each other to build a wall so they each have privacy. Now the Mishnah goes through a whole list of different building materials, gvil and gazis, and explains how thick the wall has to be. If you make it out of a strong material, it has to be this thick. Out of a weaker material, it has to be this thick. Goes through all of the halachas. The Mishnah ends, Hakoluthi minaga medina. So the Rishayim asks, Taisus, the Rosh, say, what do you mean? If how thick the wall has to be is defined by minog, why did we spend half a Mishnah going through the different materials and explaining how many tefachim it has to be? Just say, how thick the wall is, look, you know, go to your local building code and follow the minog. Zakramin of Tam, Vais Oyes, we do not follow all minhagim. There's a concept of a minog gerua, a minog shtus. If you have a minog that doesn't make sense, people build walls, but for some reason there's a mishagas. They build walls either much thicker than they need to or much thinner than is viable. Even though it's a minog, even though everyone does it, you can't force someone to follow such a minog. It's a minog gerua. People, while there is a stoma, well, if we don't speak out, we're accepting the norms, but we're not accepting to do crazy things that don't make sense. And therefore, if something is a minog gerua, then it will not have taikiv in halacha. Now, obviously, minog gerua is something which is very subjective. How do you define whether this makes sense or not? And there are some very interesting tshuvas that discuss minhagim, where they argue about it. I mean, there's for example, rent control. Rent control is an old dispute. There are dozens of tshuvas, and there's issues of dina malchus dina. That's not for today. But there's another issue of minhag. Because Moshe writes that even if there's no dina machus dina on rent control, today there's a minhag. Whenever you move into an apartment which is governed by rent control, there's a minhag, it was accepted, and therefore it's going to be binding in halacha. The Chavetzel Sasharin says, nothing doing. He writes that everyone knows that rent control was created by a bunch of socialists and communists who had something against the rich landlords. It's just a way to deprive them of the rent that they're entitled to. And therefore, there's no dina malchus dina. If it is a minog, it's a minog gerua, and he throws it out. So, again, obviously it's not clear in halacha, but you're going to have to look at each case, and you know, Bezin will have to determine, is this a minog that makes sense or not? The Chazon Ish, and based on Shimon Zadeshin, says that there's an important exception to this. Let's say I get up there and I say, I'm driving down the street, and I decide, I can even prove, it makes absolutely no sense that we stop at red lights and we go at green. It'd make a lot more sense, we'll stop at green and go at red. And let's say I can convince a Bezdin that I'm right, and this whole thing is a minog gerua. So will we now be allowed to go through red lights? So no. So again, forget about dina malchus dina for a moment. But there, Zogu Chumas Hadeshen, this whole concept of mino gerua is, if I have a private deal between two people, so in this private deal, Minog is very important, and unless we speak out otherwise, we have to follow the minog. If it's a minog geruah, if it makes no sense to do this, so even though it's a minog, I never agreed, there's no implicit agreement to do something insane. Zokter Trumas Hadeshen, that's only true in a private contract. If you're dealing with a tzibur, if you have rules that how to govern a tzibur, there he says, we follow a minhag whether it makes sense or not. And he explains, because however ridiculous you think the tax code is, or however ridiculous you think the traffic laws are, it's better to follow the rules than to have chaos. And therefore, whenever you're dealing with a tzibur, whenever there's a public matter, if there's a minhag, you have to follow it regardless of whether you consider it geruah or not. Obviously, there are procedures to changing minhagim. You'll have a vote, you'll have whatever you do, your rebellion, whatever it takes to change the rules. But as long as these are the rules, the Trumas Hadeshen says that since it's a tzibur, you can't make any arguments of minhag geruah, and you're going to be stuck following this rule. Now, based on this, there's a Trumas HaRashba that deals with a case where there were two shutfim, and we mentioned before, if you have two partners in a courtyard, there's halacha of hezek riyah. Either one could force the other one to put up a wall that they have privacy. There's a minhag in a certain place not to build walls. They were not makbid on hezek riyah. No, who needs privacy anyway? And no one did it. Zog the Rashba, this minhag is not has no tokif. And he says, because this minhag is something which is against one of the yisoidos of one of the gedorim of Klal Yisrael, Matoibo Alecha Yaakov, and therefore he says such a minhag cannot be binding. Now he doesn't really specify what the makar of this is, but l'chayre it would mean because it's a minhag geruah. If in halacha there is something wrong with having a situation where everyone's psachim are mechuvenes zeh keneged zeh, where everyone can see what's going on in the other person's house, then a minhag to ignore that halacha, or the fact that people are not makbid on something which is aser, that's a minhag geruah, and that's something that you can't force someone to follow. Based on this, any time the minhag is going directly against an iser, it's going to, in the very least, be suspect of being a minhag geruah. The Torah says there's an iser to rip someone off. Even if everyone would decide one day that we're not going to be makbid on ayna, we're going to take advantage and try to overcharge people as much as we can, and if a tourist comes into my store, just watch out. That would be a minhag geruah. It's a minhag which is going directly against the halacha in the Torah. Masha'ein kein, and there's a bunch of, it is machloikas, there are a bunch of shuvas about the matter, but it does seem that if you have an industry where, for example, selling a esrogim, they used to sell a esrogim, they used to sell it in closed boxes. And the minhag was, you bought whatever it was, and that was it. You could not come back and claim that it was like, no, that the price wasn't fair, or there was a mum, there were no tainas on that. Now there's a whole machlokes in the Achrayim whether such a minhag is binding. Some places say no. First of all, it's a minhag against halacha, because it's an iser of noah, it's an iser of mum. Second of all, even if you want to be meichel, we learned by noah, you can't be meichel noah unless you know how much you're being overcharged. Just to say al menashe and l'chol lai noah doesn't work. And therefore, since even a t'nai can't work, a minhag which just makes it as if there was a t'nai can't be any better. And therefore, according to some poskim, minhag will not be effective. Other tshuvas argue, and the reason why they argue is that enochanami. If you want to go ahead and wake up one day and say, you know what, we're not going to do ayno anymore. We're not going to be goyrisit. That's a minhag keneged halacha. It's also a minhag geruah. That probably will not have tokif. But if you have a specific industry where you want to go buy an ester, you want to go pick it out, look at it. Handle, that's fine. You buy that, there'll be ayna. But there's another way of selling it. We're going to put it in a sealed box, and everyone knows sometimes they'll do better, sometimes they'll do worse, it'll be a potluck. It's a new way of selling things. In such a case, if the Seichrim get together and say, in this unique way of doing business, it will not work if there's tainas ayna. Because then, every time, whoever gets a nice asset will keep it, whoever gets a not nice asset will come back and claim ayna. So this whole selling doesn't make sense. So in such a case, they get together, and especially if you have the seichrim getting together, it becomes, it's like a takana of the seichrim. In such a case, since it's limited to a specific type of mekach u'memkar, it's not undermining the whole halacha, it's just saying, this way of doing business, we're not going to be makban atayna seinor, because otherwise it won't be viable. In such a case, some places do accept it, it's not considered a minogaruah, because it's just a way to do business that otherwise wouldn't be possible.
Even the end user?
That's what he's talking about, end users. Where they used to just sell sealed boxes, and you were not able, I guess like today, it has to be kosher, but you weren't able to come back afterwards and say, I paid X amount of dollars and it's really worth less. Well, they didn't sell you the box. They were selling you the box. They weren't selling you the asterisk. And the box wasn't, you know, this box you saw. But so it's this issue with Hesroigim and with Mumin, I know, is there's a lot of Poiskim on both sides. It seems that the Poiskim that say that there's no Tainus, I know, if you look at it very carefully, they're all talking about very narrow cases. Not that a minog that there's no I know. That's Kenegan Halacha. It was a specific way of buying and selling where they said, this type, this niche, there's no Tainus, I know, they accepted it. And the second thing is that it seems in those cases it was a minhag ha-soichrim, where all the sellers got together, this is how we're going to do business. It wasn't just like it evolved over time. It was something which the soichrim that sold it like this sold it under these terms, which is also a mile in halacha. But if it's... Okay, that's... There's a discussion there also. In Hilchos Einor, there's a discussion whether we look at, you know, you're looking at it from a very financial point of view, that you're rolling the risk into the item, and since it's unknown, it changes the value. There are many tshuvas that don't look at it. They look at what the end result is. Doesn't matter. They discuss, for example, Einor, if you buy ore and you don't know the content, how much gold there is. So, from a hedge point of view, we'll just assess what the risk is, what the probability is, and that'll be its value. In many of the tshuvas, we look at, we'll wait till the end, we see how much gold there was, and then we'll figure out where there is Einar, where there isn't Einar. Miraj Dam makes your point. He says, today, where it became the custom to sell risk, and people buy it not knowing one way or another, that goes into the value, and he says there's no way to know. But it's not clear, and many of the shuvas do not go with that, and it's going to be a practical question of is there a developed... An auction itself, some of the shuvas that talk about I know are discussing an auction. Shaul Meshev says there's no way to know by an auction, because everyone knows the price is set by however much the other person's willing to pay. The Tshuva Shai says, even by an auction, you can come back with Tainas Mum, and he says, even a minhag will not help. Because the same way, Amanashi and Lechalai Einor will not work if you don't know how much you're being ripped off, a minhag cannot be better than that.
So it's a consumer item and a commercial item, whether or not people are risk elements.
Okay, risk element is a new point. Today it will certainly be true, and if the minhag is to sell things and for the risk to be part of the price, that's certainly true, but it really depends on the case. Okay, just before we end, just a quick show of hands. We're not sure about as far as next week. Do people expect to be able to be here, or it's Chana vacation and people are going to be away?
Which one do you want to see? Here?
Okay, we'll start off with the people who will be here. Let's... Okay. So everybody?
Continue?
Wait, should we stay on the topic or should we do a... What? Hanukkah? Okay. Alright, so what we may do, since some people can't be here, we may discuss gambling, kvitloch, and something of the like. So, I don't know if more people will be here or less people will be here. But if you're gonna gamble before this year.